Hello and welcome to the McKinsey Africa podcast with me, Kerry Naidu. I'm delighted to continue our tradition of bringing you conversations with leading experts and sharing insights that address challenges and showcase significant opportunities managers and leaders on the continent are grappling with. Last year, we began a fascinating series of conversations focusing on what one industry expert called the continent's fintech eruption. We've been speaking to some of Africa's most prominent fintech leaders about this phenomenon, where it's headed, and what will it take to build it into the future. And I'm so excited to be interviewing Ashraf Sabri, founder and CEO of Fowry, one of Africa's oldest and most successful fintechs. Launched in 2008, Fowry is the largest mobile money platform in Egypt. It connects more than 35 million users through 166,000 service points across the country and can be used for over 850 services, ranging from utility bills and school tuition to traffic fines and insurance. The company raised $122 million in private equity before going public, listing on the Egyptian exchange in July 2019. And in 2020, its valuation reached $1 billion, making Fowry Egypt's first unicorn, or perhaps being proudly African, we should refer to it as Egypt's first zebracorn. In 2022, Forbes listed Fowry as one of the top 25 fintech companies in the Middle East for its banking and payment technology services. But perhaps the achievement its founder and CEO is most proud of is that Fowry is totally homegrown, with its tech 100% developed by Egyptians. Welcome to the McKinsey Africa podcast, Ashraf. Would you agree that Fowry is one of your most treasured accolades?
Absolutely. I mean, for two reasons. The first reason is that we scaled the platform to international standards. And the second reason is it is a real competitive advantage as well. It helps me be ready to market changes, integrate ecosystems, be more responsive to different needs, which is completely different than relying on a software that you buy or something like that.
I'm also delighted to welcome Maiwa Kuyoro back to the Africa podcast. Maiwa is a partner in McKinsey's Lagos office, where she leads the financial services practice with a focus on banking, fintech, and payments. Maiwa has over a decade's experience working in private, public, and social sector institutions across the continent. She also leads McKinsey's work with African startup companies, especially fintech concerns, and is a highly regarded thought leader on innovation in the space. Hello and welcome back, Maiwa.
It's lovely to be here again.
So let's kick off at the beginning of the Fowry story. Ashraf, you left a corporate career at Rio Holdings and before that at IBM to begin a startup. Why? What did you want to achieve?
I will tell you the truth. I mean, I didn't leave any place to another place with a specific objective. But it is always the situation was, you know, I felt that my progress where I am have reached an end and I have to find a new initiative. And the initiatives were different. When I left IBM, I joined a startup as well that turned up to be one of the conglomerates in Egypt. It's called Raya. I took it public. I took it regional and everything. And then my career ended at Raya as well. And so I said, well, I cannot feel progress, so I'm going to start another company. And when I started Fowry, to be honest with you again, the idea evolved because of an experience that happened within Raya. We were actually going to the market raising funds for Raya. And when we went there to the market, I was always asked a specific question. Where is your recurring part of your revenue? And Raya was almost a project-based company. So I figured out that investors like recurring revenue. So when I left Raya, I said, I'm going to look for recurring revenue. And then payment came at the core of that. It is recurring. It's happening every day. No receivables, no projects under implementation, no assets. So it is a different business model that I really found that it is very interesting as well. So what really helped me to figure out what I want to do was actually my experience in Raya meeting other investors. But it was not like, you know, I'm fed up with corporate. I'm going to go and make a startup and let us start this journey and all this stuff. It was not like that. And actually, when Fawri was established, it was an institution established. So, I mean, I didn't establish a startup and go into Series A and Series B and all that stuff. No, I have made a pitch. I went to banks. I went to private equity firms. I went to corporates. And I raised fund. And we started pretty with well-capitalized to start this new initiative. This is how it happened. And this is the reason for selecting payments. And this is where we are.
Thanks so much, Ashraf. You talked a lot about recurring revenue and then, you know, payments had recurring revenue. Were you always clear on, you know, the link between, you know, payments and recurring revenues? Or, you know, did you have a clear objective and, you know, were you very, very sure on how it would pan out?
I will tell you, I mean, it's a mix of both. Okay. To me, I was looking at payment as something that happens all the time. But to make sure that it is really recurring, I had to look into what sort of payment would I start with. And I started with bill payment and mobile top-ups and all this stuff, which is by nature something that happens every month and by nature is used by all the population. So payment on one hand and the type of payment on the second hand. So it became very much recurring. And then we evolved the payment system to include things that are less recurring, but in the meantime, happens every day as well by different people. So I think it is a mix of both. Payment as a nature is something that people would do every day. What you select in payment would tell you how much recurring it is. So I think it is a mix between that payment is something that happens, people pay every day. And the second is selecting what are the businesses you want to enable payment for to achieve the recurring objective.
Very clear, Ashraf. And we talk about payments in Africa now and see there's a huge revolution going. We see that there is increasing smartphone ownership, declining internet costs, and expanded network coverage. We do think and we see that the stage is set for the next phase of fintech growth. But before we talk about the future and how fintechs can carve out a share of the expanding market, can you tell us a little bit about how you set up your company to become what was really a pioneer in Egypt? It became kind of a role model to other companies, didn't it?
We had a very clear vision that, believe it or not, we are working on it till now. And our vision was about connecting organizations and consumers to initiate payments. So it was a different form of payment. The classical form of payment was that, you know, I mean, you enable payment in a retail store, you enable payment at a shop, you enable payment at a website. And this was actually the standard payment. But what we have done is, we thought that this is not very relevant in Egypt. And what we need to do is that we need to create an alternative payment system, because this is really what matches what people are looking for. So we enabled the banking system to be ready to help their customers to pay their bills through banking channels. So our payment was in the ATM, was in the mobile banking, was in the internet banking. And we enable unbanked consumers to pay through the nearest kiosk. So when you look at the entire ecosystem, the payment transactions comes at the end of the journey, not at the beginning of the journey. The beginning of the journey is to display the amount due to be paid to the client at his bank or at the corner street on the point of sale or on a mobile application, which means that I have to integrate with the service provider. After the client is happy with what he should pay, then he would initiate the payment. This idea of sitting in between organizations and between customers and their service providers and between service providers and banks have actually helped Fawri a lot to develop what will happen in the future. Because, you know, digital is about integrating enterprises together and making sure that you can leverage digital by extending the boundaries of any business, by creating convenience to the consumers, by creating a more efficient payment ecosystems for the enterprise. So the idea of extending the businesses through integration with other channels was really at the core of everything. And this is how things have evolved, actually. And this is why we are not a MasterCard or a Visa. I used to use a very simple example, actually, when we started this business, which is, when you go to a supermarket, you take two receipts, one receipt for your payment by card and one receipt for what you have paid. which means that the payment and the business were never connected. Because when you go back home, if you mix the receipts, you don't know what you use this receipt for, what items that you bought. So the whole idea was how to connect payment into business, couple business information to the payment transaction, which created a whole different ecosystem than the standard payment system.
That's such a powerful example, because I can see exactly what you're talking about. You go to the supermarket, you have your POS receipts, you have your till receipts, and they're so different. And I compare that to being in other markets where it's just one receipt, right? It's just one thing that speaks to it. So this idea of convenience and making things easy and connecting different parts of the system really, really, really resonates. I'm going to ask you, because I think a lot of startups are now slowly maturing. Now, you know, the question is, how do we grow? How do we scale? So you've talked, when you started, around having a very clear vision. As you moved through, the various stages in the company's life cycle, what were the other things that you would say were important? And let me give you a few thoughts that I've heard from other founders. People have talked a lot about talent. People have talked a lot about corporate governance as you grow. People have talked a lot about being able to scale across different product categories, across different product markets. So what were the other things that you would say are very important to you as you sort of developed and became more mature as a company?
This was another lesson that I learned from Raya. And it is actually very important too. When I went with Raya to the capital market to raise funds, I was very proud that as Raya, we were a holding company having 18 companies in our corporate org chart. And I actually have seen very clearly in the eyes of the investors that this looks to me like something that is completely not aligned, different lines of businesses. And they were trying to figure out what we are exactly. And this was a lesson that I learned by heart. So my growth strategy was always that I am leveraging the strengths I have by adding another part to the ecosystem. And it will give you clear examples about that. So when we had the point of sales in the kiosks and in the retail stores and supermarkets to enable walking customers to pay their bills, when we thought about acceptance, okay, which is enabling those kiosks to accept electronic payments, what does this mean? It means that cost of customer acquisition is the same, because those are our existing customer base. We are using the same infrastructure, which is the point of sale where the walk-in payments for bill payments is happening, to offer the client another service, which is accepting electronic payment. So this is an addition. And then we said, we want to go into merchant lending business. And then again, cost of customer acquisition is the same. We use the same device to enable the merchant to have a lending account where he can pay his suppliers. So what I'm trying to tell you is the idea of scaling and building, really, you should always think on what assets do you have? What competitive advantage do you have when you add a new service? So just going, scaling services and scaling geographies and scaling everything on paper, it looks nice. It is a multiplier, more offerings, means more revenue, more geographies means more revenue, less risk and all the stuff, okay, which is the text. But the reality is you have to make sure that each step is leveraging the assets of the company, and is the assets of the company is giving you a competitive advantage to be ahead of your competition while giving a new offering, whether this is in cost of customer acquisition, whether this is in operation cost, whether this is in company experience and skill set that is needed to do the job. And all of this would take you one step ahead. And it is about one step ahead. If you don't see a clear value that would differentiate you from competition to the client, whether cost, whether product feature, whether whatever it is, then probably you are going to go into a fight that is not really, that might be cost eroding, revenue eroding, whatever it is. So from my perspective, I think scaling is about knowing where to scale. Scaling is about being well capitalized. Scaling is about, you are not thinking of the second round of finance. You are thinking on how you are going to scale the business. And this is very important. And I think this is what happened in many places And we have seen this happening in Egypt, I mean, the last year, where the investment community was focused on the next round of finance, not focusing about scaling the business. So they scaled the business, not for the sake of the business, but they scaled the business for the sake of the next round of finance. And then they found that the next round of finance is not there and they were bankrupt. Others were looking, you know, about we have to have multiple geographies to reduce the risk. Very standard things that they know that investors were very keen to hear. So they worked on how the investors would finance them in the next round without being sure that the core business can scale profitably with the proper cash flows, with proper abilities to handle growth and all the stuff. And I think this is very important for anybody that wants to scale to understand that scaling is not easy. And scaling needs, you don't have to be every single time, you know, I mean, you have 2 months and then you are going to run out of cash and you are looking for, it doesn't work that way.
I like what you said, scaling is not easy. And I tend to talk about the phenomenon you just described as pursuing valuation over value versus, you know, create value and then the valuation should hopefully come. Let's talk a bit about, you know, the fact that you started and entered the market. And we've seen actually yourselves and other contemporaries in other markets starting by building infrastructure specific to their country, right? And you've discussed this. You just mentioned it in your last response around focusing on creating a product that works for the market that you're in. You know, in a very real sense, you've actually created an industry that uses the infrastructure that you've created. So how did you manage to create that ecosystem you've just described?
I was very lucky, and I would like to stress the fact that luck is part of all what's happening. I mean, it doesn't mean that luck is what makes things happen, but it means that you can be fortunate enough to have somebody who is really excellent as part of your team, fortunate enough to have the regulatory framework helping you, or fortunate enough that you are ahead of the regulator. To answer your question, I had an extremely good architect that joined the company at inception. And what he had developed as an architecture is an open system that is loosely coupled. What would that mean? It would mean that the architecture of the system allows other systems to integrate easily, allows other platforms. So, I mean, you can use an ATM to make a payment. You can use a point of sale to make a payment. You can use a mobile to make a payment. You can make multiple payments on the same infrastructure. You can take the transaction for lending on the same infrastructure. What I'm trying to say is that the architecture of the technology considered that we should have an open system that is loosely coupled. So when we go to any platform, we can add. We don't have to rewrite the entire platform again to add a new service. Every other service is added to the system. And this ended that we have a platform that we can even replicate part of it or the whole of it in other markets. Because not necessarily when you go to other markets. We went to Sudan, for example. So Sudan went to a part of our system. So because this was really open, they took whatever they want and they left the rest, developed their own. So I think that this was at the core of our ability to add new services without interrupting the existing service. And this is really important, because when you are providing a service like what we are doing, processing almost 3 or 4 million transactions a day, you don't have the luxury of saying, I'm going to add to the existing system. You cannot do that because you cannot afford taking the risk. So when you need to add a service, you are very afraid. You know, you tell yourself, it is working like that. Leave it. Don't touch it.
Exactly.
Or it will take you ages until you are sure that when the new service comes, it will not interrupt the old service. I think this was, at the core of scaling easily without disrupting the existing service, it was that our platform architecture was really well designed.
Very good. You've come to banks, but I'm gonna actually pause that a little bit and talk about something which, again, a lot of people in the space speak around, which is the fact that cash is still king in Africa and is used in around 90% of transactions that we have today on the continent. While on the one hand, this means that there is a huge potential for fintech revenues to grow, it must be a major influencer in expanding takeoff. So can you talk to us about how you see cash and reducing cash within the economy, especially the Egyptian economy?
Well, let us agree that cash is a tough competitor. When I say cash is a tough competitor, because it have many advantages to the payer and the PE.
Exactly.
That is not available in electronic payment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use some, because people sometimes think that I'm crazy when I'm saying that, and I am with cash against electronic, which is not the truth. The truth, I mean, or not the reality. But the whole thing is the transaction in cash is confirmed. You give the cash, you take the goods, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The transaction of electronic is not really as confirmed, okay? It can be subject to dispute. It can be subject to a refund. It can be subject that the money have not been settled in the right time. Many things come with the transaction. The other thing is that when you go into any country and you have the currency in front of you, anybody would know the currency. So the brand of the currency is very high, known to everybody. The third thing is that if you want to compete with cash, you have to look into what you really can create with the electronic payment to the main beneficiaries. And you have to make sure that the ecosystem is willing to pay, the beneficiary should pay for the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it is amazing. I mean, you go to a small merchant and you tell him, you know, electronic payment is good and you have to pay 1% out of your
money. Exactly.
Because electronic payment is good. And he will ask you, why electronic payment is good? And you can tell him, because it is safer. Okay, you don't have to carry cash. And then he will tell you, I have been working like for 30 years with cash and I have never been stolen. Can you please tell me how it is dangerous? And then he can tell you, I pay my suppliers in cash. What happens when I take your electronic balance in terms of payment? Should I go to the bank and cash it out and then go to give it back to the supplier? But, you know, I cannot do that because the banks will give me the money after 3 days and the supplier comes every day.
Mm.
What I'm trying to tell you is that you have to really listen to the real needs and the real problems of the people. So what we have done, we have tied lending to electronic payments. So I am helping the merchant to grow his business by giving him cheap money that is based on payment transactions that are used as a collateral.
Mm-hmm.
So I have given enough incentive to do that. I am creating convenience to the customer. I am creating 100% refund guarantees, regardless of the situation. What I'm trying to tell you is that the whole thing that we are in need for is that we have to understand the real values and address the real concerns. Everybody will tell you electronic payments will affect, but the reality is they affect growth in GDP because they keep the money within the system so that lending becomes transaction-based, becomes more secure, becomes of lower cost, so it can help growing the entire economy.
Absolutely. I love what you said around thinking through the convenience factor, thinking through who the beneficiary is. And also just, you know, the example you said, look, I'm a supplier, I'm an SME, I have to pay my suppliers in cash, but my customers are paying me in electronic payments and it just makes my whole value chain even more difficult. So you have to put on something that will make it worth my while to really adopt electronic payments. It's actually quite profound. And I think we're seeing, you know, one of the things that we're doing as we're assessing companies, we're actually seeing a lot of payments companies now beginning to add lending, what I would call a value-added service, onto their portfolio in order to solve this problem. So the way payment has grown very quickly, I think this is probably going to be another space where we see a lot of activity over the next few years. We've talked about scaling, we've talked about the vision, we've talked about convenience and so on and so forth. I would actually like to ask you, what would you say have been perhaps one or two of the biggest challenges you have either faced or are currently facing as you're operating within a market such as ours?
Initially, the biggest challenge was making people trust that when they pay at a kiosk, they will have the service rendered for a telecom operator. I mean, this was a real challenge. So creating trust in our payment ecosystem was of paramount importance. Because in payment business, there's no 90% success.
It's binary.
I think trust was the main challenge at the beginning. And now, when you are scaling and trusted there and everything is there, there are issues that would worry me that probably investors wouldn't look at. Investors would look at growth, you know, would look at profitability, would look at EBITDA margins, would look at all this stuff. But I'm very worried about the security of the platform, because if anything happens, it will be a real issue. I'm worried about the uptime of my service, because if you are down for 3 hours, plus it is a financial loss, a big financial loss, but it is as well a reputational issue. So your reputation is key. I'm worried about making sure that I have and can retain the right talent and the right professional people within the organization. To tell you the truth, those are the main things that worry me. The rest is much easier, because those are the things that you tend to ignore while growing, because they are very costly and they take a lot of money, and they are not reflected in the top line. They are always reflected in the middle lines. So the temptation to ignore them is very high. But the reality is, if you don't figure their importance, when things go bad, it is very bad as well. So those are the things that are really worrying me, that my system have to be secured, our uptime and service availability have to be done, our infrastructure have to be ready for the growth. I can retain the right people who understand the whole thing. I can service millions of customers with a decent customer support and CRM system. Those are the invisible things to investors that worry me, but they are at the core of my worries.
Yeah, I like, again, it's very deep focus on the invisible things, focus on the middle line, because those are the things that have the ability to make or break your business. Yeah, that's very, very true. Maybe one final parting thought from you. You've mentioned talent, and I really want to unpack that a little bit, because I've seen how you're very proud of the fact that Bowery is primarily Egyptian. All the technology has been built in Egypt. Was that something that was very deliberate for you when you were starting out, to say, look, I'm going to build a homegrown company to solve homegrown problems? How did you think about ensuring that there was enough local representation and local talent within your organization?
It was not initially planned, I mean, to tell you the truth. I mean, it started actually that when I looked internationally for software to accommodate my needs, I never found, because of this requirement for a non-standard platform that can integrate entities together. So we started using our own resources to develop. And then in the course of making things happen, I discovered that with the right coaching and the right environment, the talented Egypt is really good. And the value of owning the software is really enabling you to be much, much more competitive and much, much more responding. So I like that. So I took the decision that we are going to continue on the IP, leverage local resources, and discover the potential of people. And I think sometimes we don't give people enough opportunity to unleash their potential. They are good, but nobody is helping them to discover themselves. And I found that my people are real partners to me, and their potential is very high. Another dimension that was important to me, I plan to do a good business, but I discovered that I can do it with locals. It is more competitive. They have a good talent. They have full potential. So because it is more competitive and they can deliver, then it makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. That's just so beautiful to hear, Ashraf. The line that I'm taking away from that is, give people the opportunity to show their potential. Right. And you talk about values, which is also very important to us as McKinsey. We're a very values driven organization. And so, again, seeing the coherence in kind of your values and how you go about building your business is quite a privilege to hear about. Any final questions, any final thoughts for our listeners before we sign off today?
Passion. I mean, you have to be passionate about it. Passion would make you work 18 hours a day without feeling tired. It is not a job. It is something different. But you have to love it, and you have to be part of the team, and you have to work together. This is what makes the difference. Passion, persistence, hard work. It is not only knowledge and talent. It is belonging. It is loving. It is caring. I don't know what it is exactly, but it is more than knowledge and talent.
There you have it. I think those are some excellent points to bring our discussion to a close. Thank you to our listeners for joining us and tuning in to the McKinsey Africa podcast series. And thank you so much, Ashraf and Maiwa. Ashraf, it's been a pleasure listening to you, your story and insights.
Thank you very much, everybody. It was a pleasure. Very enjoyable podcast.
Look out for the next podcast in the series on Africa's fintech industry. Out in a few weeks, we'll be chatting to Interswitch's Mitchell Alegbe. If you'd like to learn more about African fintech or view some of our recent thought leadership, we encourage you to visit our insights page on mckinsey.com/ZA. You can also follow us on LinkedIn and on Twitter by searching our handle @McKinsey Africa. From me, Kerry Naidu, thank you.